Welcome to Supply Chain Now, the voice of global supply chain. Supply Chain Now focuses on the best in the business for our worldwide audience, the people, the technologies, the best practices, and today's critical issues, the challenges and opportunities. Stay tuned to hear from those making global business happen right here on Supply Chain Now.
Hey, good morning. Scott Luton here with you on Supply Chain Now. Welcome to today's show. Hey, on this episode, a special episode, we're talking with a leadership dynamo that helps companies create an army of problem solvers, a culture of problem solvers, and much, much more. She's a sought-after executive coach, strategy consultant, and keynote speaker, and she hosts her own podcast series, the Lead Lean Podcast. I think I've got that right. So you're in store for a treat today, a repeat guest, which we love here at Supply Chain Now. Let's welcome in Crystal Davis. Crystal, how you doing?
Hi, thank you so much for inviting me back. I love it, love it, love it. And I'm so excited to be here today.
Well, we're glad to have you. Now, this has been the getting you back. We had to go through your agent and your agent's agent. And
my one email agent.
That's right. Well, you've been busy. And it was neat to catch up at the end of 2020. And finally get you back on here, because we didn't talk enough. I guess it was that May 2019? Does that sound about right?
I think it was.
Yeah, when you were in Atlanta, or I know you hail from Atlanta, but AME came to Atlanta and brought
AME
an event.
Came to Atlanta. They had their regional meeting here.
That's right. And you keynoted. I think Mark Braun also keynoted.
Absolutely.
So good stuff. So,
and then you somehow influenced me, and now I have a podcast. I don't know what happened.
Well, and we're going to talk about that too. I'm not surprised in the least bit, as we talked about. So we're going to chat about that in a minute. So first off, for the handful of folks that don't know you, and for some of the folks that maybe weren't listening to our podcast when you first came on, let's get to know Crystal Davis a little better. So tell us where you're from, and tell us about your upbringing a little bit.
Absolutely. So I'm Crystal Yvette Davis. That's what the Y stands for. I hail from Jackson, Mississippi. So I'm a country girl. I'm a Mississippi State, Hail State Bulldog. So I always get into fights about, you know, who's the real bulldog, you know, over here in Georgia.
Oh. We just lost half our audience.
I know, right?
Oh,
no, but I play fair. I play fair. I love all the Bulldogs, and I love the SEC. So, you know, we're good there. We're good there. And as long as they beat Alabama, well, you know, I just have to put that in there.
Hey, you
got to. I'm in Georgia, I have to represent the Bulldogs here.
Well, so you graduated with an industrial engineering degree from Mississippi State, right?
Industrial engineering from Mississippi State, yes.
So that's well above my pay grade. Every time I talk with a professional engineer, that's too much math for me. But what was it, you know, why did you choose IE?
You know what was interesting? I went into college thinking that I wanted to be in computer science and computer engineering. And while I love technology, I felt like there was a side of me that was just, I felt like that was going to, it didn't represent my personality. That's the best way to say it. So I actually went on a hunt to every engineering school and talked to the deans, talked to some students. And when I landed in the IE department, what I loved about it was the interaction with the human being, and that fit my personality. And so that's how I landed there, you know, and being able to impact change.
We all need folks that want to impact change. I love that. Hey, one more question before we talk about more of your professional journey, kind of after college. So Jackson, what was it like? Give me one thing about what it was like growing up in Jackson, Mississippi. My brain always goes to food and like the places that you grew up loving to eat at. You know, I think as Southerners, we enjoy that. But what's one thing that was special about growing up in Jackson?
You know what? One thing that I found special, so I'm a 70s baby, giving my age away, but one thing that I found special was it was peaceful and it was rich in family and friends and culture. And then there were just, for me in particular, my family had, you know, very high expectations, and we loved family time. Most of my friends were family, right? Well, and cousins.
Love her. Yeah. Did you come from a big family? Lots of cousins like I do?
Yeah.
Nothing like it.
Family, nothing like it. And Sunday dinners. Homemade things from scratch. Homemade biscuits. And
oh, gosh.
Yeah.
You got to stop, Chris. I'm about to starve now. Well, hey, one more. Oh, culture. You mentioned culture because that seemed like an early lesson learned, an early value strongly associated with culture. That seems like it would play out with the rest of your career. And we'll probably circle back and talk about culture here in a minute. But let's talk about your professional journey. So after college, you kind of walk us through, you know, a couple of key roles that help shape your worldview.
So after college, I landed at a tier three in the automotive industry and made my way up to a tier one. And so I spent 17 years in the automotive industry, and that really shaped my life.
That's like 57 years in any other industry, right?
It is. And people don't understand that. They used to talk about the life expectancy after you retire from automotive because just high stress. Very fast paced, high volume. But the blessing in my automotive journey was it took me around the world. And so you've got this little country girl from Jackson, Mississippi, that ends up in working in Spain and working in Portugal and Germany and, you know, all around the world, working 4.5 years in Mexico. So, you know, I learned so much. And I think going back just briefly to the culture piece, that my family always just focused on treating people right, okay? And I think that helped me be able to learn and be open to all of these cultures that I experienced in moving around. But the automotive industry probably was, for me, the most prevalent part of my career because that is where I learned Lean before I learned Six Sigma, Lean and Six Sigma, both in the automotive industry, but really cut my teeth in Lean in the automotive industry.
Well, if I am familiar with your bio accurately enough, I think you had some time spent with Toyota Senseis. We're really learning.
That, now you talk about the big Eureka moment. Those two gentlemen, Rick Harris and Mr. Yamada, they taught me so much. Very tough teachers, but I wouldn't trade the experience, Scott, because I learned the true essence of, you know, what we were doing. Before my encounters with both of them, I was more of a person that was really just focused on tools and tactics and process improvement. I learned so much from Rick about understanding the whole business and understanding the connection between everything. And then from Mr. Yamada, I learned about corporate responsibility, community responsibility, understanding the financials, understanding where the business was going, and how all of that plays into continuous improvement. But prior to both of those experiences, I was just, you know, I was happy learning tools and implementing tools and didn't understand the principles.
Well, you know, what's interesting though, going back to what you learned from your family about, you know, treating people right, you know, that early lesson learned in a role where you're driving change and you're working with people to drive change, that's got to be a critical early lesson learned to impact your career as well, right?
Oh, absolutely. Because, you know, although I had that lesson as a child, you come out of college, right? You're supposed to be this hot shot engineer and people are looking to you for answers. And what I learned was that, you know, before I went to Mexico, I was working in factories where people they were at 45 years in and still working. And so I had to learn to respect that the people who have worked there all this time are truly experts.
That's right. Yeah.
Right. And although I might know some engineering and some math and science, I needed to learn how to show respect. And that's how I started to learn the true essence of what that means.
I love that. You know, we're going to have to bring you back because I bet you could write several books on your 17 years in automotive alone. And then there's so many big issues facing that industry here today, but we'll have to bring you back to address some of that. Let's talk about one of my favorite topics, which you're touching on already, is leadership. All right. I'm a big old leadership nerd. All right. The pandemic, you can't overstate it enough. Of course, it's changed life in so many different ways. It's also, whether we like it or not, probably shaped most people's views on what real, no-nonsense, practical leadership is all about. So any thoughts on how your view on leadership has evolved a bit in recent months?
Yes. Let's see. I could talk forever on this, but I'm gonna identify a couple of things here. One thing that I've noticed is that I think that a lot of people in leadership roles are being tested in a number of facets from the pandemic. One, I've seen actually more micromanagement than I've seen in years. And the second thing is busyness. So with Zoom, or I won't call Zoom specifically, but with virtual meetings, I think that they've lost sight of, you know, there are people that make decisions, have made decisions when they were physically on site, that they've now taken that power and that autonomy away from them because they're of the micromanagement and constantly being in meetings and needing to be informed about every aspect. So I think from the perspective of some organizations, the crisis of being able to deliver to customers, having, you know, choppy supply chains has led a lot of organizations to where they're managing down too much. The second thing that that kind of surprised me, I don't know why, is that we've lost a little bit of the human appeal and respect. So working virtually now means that the boundaries of work and home are blurry. And a lot of people don't recognize that. And I know early on, and this may have softened some, I know early on, you know, there were lots of questions around, well, how do I know that people are working? How can I measure productivity with people working remote? And again, you know, thinking very tactically instead of thinking about the person and thinking about the strategic elements of what actually needs to get done. What are the milestones that are important, not what tasks are you doing every day? So those are two things that have really stood out on the negative side. On the positive side, I've seen some very beautiful things happen, not only as a result of the pandemic, but some of the social things that happened because we were all still, that people started to pay attention to. And so I've seen a lot of good human kindness, empathy, desire to learn and connect more with people at a human level. And I love it when I see people and their kids will run into the shop, you know, and they'll get embarrassed. And I'll say, don't be embarrassed. Why don't you introduce your child? Like, this is an opportunity that like none other. This is normal work now. So those are some of my views. I do think that it's a precarious position for leaders because there's so many uncertainties. I mean, the environment is so volatile. How you make decisions, how much risk you take, you know, how you hold people accountable to performance metrics, all of that's changed. And I think people are still figuring some things out.
So, you know, I imagine one of the things that helps you successfully navigate and help organizations navigate, you've got a variety of experience in different sectors, as I recall from our last couple of conversations. And so kind of seeing unique and common challenges in different ways organizations and leadership teams have tackled that. But, you know, also, and I know you do executive coaching, and certainly I can tell you from a Supply Chain Now standpoint, we've relied on advisors, key advisors that have been there and done that and helped us navigate these times when everyone is surprised to some degree, some folks more so than others, but really leaning on that internal or external expertise and talent and leadership has been really important. We could talk about leadership, I feel like, probably you and I for hours on end. But I love that the human element you speak to, because there is, if you really go looking for it, there's lots of good news and there's lots of learning taking place. And there's, I think folks are leaning into some of the conversations that they have shied away from for a long time. And that's when we all can tackle things together that need to be. So let's talk about, let's shift gears a bit. We'll talk about continuous improvement. Oh, I can hear the angels singing when I bring up that phrase, continuous improvement. So let's I've got two questions. I'm gonna ask you one thing that you see that works well and one thing you see time and time again, it doesn't. So for starters, when it comes to continuous improvement, what's one thing that you see leaders or organizations do that's really just a core best practice?
So a little off script of my normal answer. So I'm going to keep
like that.
This in the free, in the framework of the pandemic. One of the things that I have really appreciated is I know in the beginning, right, in crisis, when things are so unstable, people kind of relaxed their CI initiatives. But one of the things that I'm very excited to see, and I think has been done right, is that in the same way that leaders are trying to figure out how to deal with people working remote, they're also trying to figure out how to continuously improve when you have a hybrid organization, when you may have people on site and your centralized functions like supply planning remote. And so it's not the CI way that we are traditionally accustomed to, but I'm very delighted that people still recognize the importance and the value that continuous improvement can bring to an organization. And I what I said in the beginning, because I'll be honest with you, a lot of my colleagues felt like, oh no, you can't do it the right way if you're not on site. And so we had to learn to evolve, right? To figure out what tools and techniques could work virtually, because here was my pushback to them. If ever there was a time to solve problems, it's now.
No kidding.
It is now. Businesses are struggling to try to figure things out. You know, just think about from a supply planning perspective, when we're accustomed to depending on forecasts, no matter how unreliable or inaccurate they are, that's our lifeblood. We look at the forecast. Well, the forecast means absolutely nothing now because behaviors have completely changed.
Right.
Right. So it's that kind of stuff that I'm very appreciative of, that the companies that were true to continuous improvement have continued to try to figure it out. They have shifted, but they have continued to try to figure it out.
So just a follow-up question there. Do you think it is, given the current environment with some of those dynamics that you're speaking to and I'm speaking to, is there any difference in terms of the difficulty of driving change pre-pandemic to hopefully soon post-pandemic, but this in current environment we're in? Can you compare and contrast that for a minute? Is it about the same? Is it a little bit easier since there's so much pain? Folks are looking for solutions, or is it tougher?
So it's a great question. I would say that it's a little bit of both. So it's tougher for organizations that try to stick with their normal CI plan instead of making the pivot. So I call that, we have this plan. We may have a three-year plan of the things we need to go out and do, but you need to be able to pivot to the just-in-time challenges that the organization is having. So the organizations that were able to pivot effectively, they're faring well in that aspect. The organizations that tried to stick to the plan, they're struggling somewhat.
Yeah, agreed.
From a CI perspective.
I think, in retail, we've seen tons, of course, sadly, of lots of bankruptcies. However, on that list, and all of them chalk it up, we hear leadership teams chalking up to the pandemic. But I don't know about you, but I know some of those companies that I had interacted with pre-pandemic, and the priorities were not right. And, so they were already struggling that the pandemic and these shifting consumer patterns that you're speaking to, which is amazing, such an incredible study on, I guess, psychology, human behavior. But that was like the straw that broke the camel's back in some cases.
Yeah.
But to your point, this the pivoting, we've heard that and resilience and whatever words we've also heard a lot of in the last 12 months. But those companies that boldly shifted gears despite the challenge, despite that there was no certainty that it was all going to pay off. It's really, there's been some, to your earlier point, there's been some really amazing leadership stories out there that we're going to be probably studying and writing about a lot more in the years to come.
Oh, absolutely. I think, for you and I, this will probably be the most VUCA environment we will ever experience in our lifetime.
Really?
But volatile, uncertain, right? Complex, ambiguous. We got it all at the same time.
These business schools are going to have content for decades to train folks on, which is good. Silver linings. There's always good silver linings and some of the empathy you brought up and the human element, all that certainly is part of the silver linings here. So you spoke about one of the things that you've seen that folks get right when it comes to continuous improvement. Let's go to opposite now. What's one thing that you've seen countless times or a couple of times that you should not do if you want to drive good, successful change with your people?
Focus on the tools. only on the tools. I think, you know, the tools are the tools, and they are, you know, a core element or aspect of both Lean and Six Sigma. I think that the mistake, though, is to only focus there and not do two things: have the principles that align with the core values of the company and connect the CI strategy or plan to the business. Those are the two biggest mistakes, because most of the time they focus on the tools.
Thinking tools are magic wands, right?
Exactly. You know, and the value to the business is that it needs to align with the business problems and the business strategy, right? I could take any of those tools and go out and make something grand, make an improvement, see a productivity hit. But if it doesn't serve the business, it's for naught. If it doesn't help the business grow or save customers or expand, why do it?
Yeah, I love that. Along the same lines, when it comes to tools, I think of professional development, and I think of all the training that really, you know, companies seemingly pre-pandemic had cut corners on training and investing in workforces in some cases. And I bet they really bit them here in the last, 12, 15 months. But on the other hand, I was counting your credentials. As I told you pre-show, Crystal, I was trying to figure out, okay, what's the best way to introduce? And I've got 18 pages to pull from. You know, certified leadership development coach by the John Maxwell team, certified Lean Six Sigma black belt. Of course, you've got your MBA from Stanford, and all beyond on top of, and other things on top of your IE degree. Right before we talk about your radio, your podcast, can you just speak to our community here about the value of really investing in yourself, regardless, pandemic or no pandemic?
Oh, absolutely. This is, again, going back to my Mississippi background. My father used to say to me, he's like, as I was growing up, he would say, read a book, save money. Read a book, save your money. And those messages were ingrained in me. And the one thing that I say about, the read a book part is that whatever knowledge you acquire, no one can take it away from you. And as long as you are figuring out how you can apply that in what you love doing, I find it to be a beautiful marriage. Now, I'm a probably more an aggressive learner. I'm a fact finder. So my Colby A is I'm a high fact finder. So I love information. I love learning. I love data. But for just, anyone else who learn about who you are, your personality, and again, those skills, as long as they help you do what you love doing, you can find it in a book. You don't need it to have a degree. You can get all sorts of certifications or take webinars. There's a plethora of information out there.
Agreed. And lots of prestigious organizations have been offering up for free. That's been a neat development in recent years. But read a book, save money. Words lit by read a book, save money.
Save money.
What's your father's name?
James Davis.
James Davis. Read a book, save money. Love it. All right. So now let's talk about it. I can't only imagine. I don't know when you're getting sleep at night, Crystal. You launched the Lead Lean podcast, I want to say in the last 6 months or 8 months or so. Is that roughly?
Actually, yeah, it's October timeframe.
October. Okay. Mm-hmm. So October. Tell me why'd you launch it? And tell me just how much fun it is, and why do you do it?
Great question. So I wasn't podcasting was on my bucket list at some point in the future. But I actually had someone reach out to me about this opportunity. And it's a unique opportunity, one like I've never heard before. So IBGR.network is a business talk radio. And it's about helping entrepreneurs and business owners that want to eventually grow and possibly sell their businesses. I've never had someone from a business angle reach out about lean and operations. And so a friend of mine recommended me. We talked, and it just became a perfect marriage that I'm able to talk to C-suite leaders, small business owners about the things that I help, large organizations be able to implement around lean. I don't talk a lot about Six Sigma because that's, the statistical part, the data part is way heavy for radio. But to be able to help people understand operations and make it sexy and fun and help them grow their businesses, I love it. I love it.
I can tell. And I'm looking forward to tuning in. You mentioned Six Sigma. I've got some of that in my background as well. And it can be, you know, especially if you're like me, I'm not a mathematical genius by any stretch, and it can make your eyes roll. But it's funny how certain things stick with you. I was interacting on Twitter with one of my friends, and she was writing invitations. I can't remember what it was for. And after 37 straight correct ones, she messed up the 38th. And I said, and she was bemoaning the fact that she's got to, you know, get 600 knocked out or something. I said, well, you're not quite operating at one sigma, but hey, we'll get there. We'll get there. All right. So how can folks connect with you? How can folks tune into your podcast?
So two ways. One, you can go to any podcast provider and just search for The Lead Lean Show. And if I may, The Lead Lean Show, it's intentional. Because normally we talk about lean leadership, and I believe that leadership is an action. It's a verb. And so I flipped it. We have to lead lean. Okay.
Gotcha.
So that's the essence of the name of the show, Lead Lean.
You might have to chart that out for me, Crystal.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm a little bit slow sometimes.
So think about it this way. When you think about lean leadership, you think about an individual or people or a group of people.
Yep.
Right. And leading can be from anybody at any level, right? John Maxwell says leadership is influence, right? Not a position or a title.
Right.
So when you think about leading, you want to think about what's the action that I want people to take. So whether that's a team lead, a supervisor, a manager, a director, what's the action that I want them to take? Not just tactically, but how do they lead others?
Love that.
So that's, but you can find it at ibgr.network. You can find the podcast on any podcast channel. And then you can also find it on the app. There's an app for the radio. So,
and we'll include links in the show notes to help make it really easy. We're after one click here for what folks hear about. So, you know, as we thought before we kicked off the conversation, I'm not going to have enough time to ask all the questions I would like for you to speak to, Crystal. But hey, we got to leave folks wanting a little bit more. We'll bring you back next time and hopefully live next time. I'd love to get some the Q&A from our audience. And one of our favorite things, these live streams. All right. So we've already kind of talked about how folks can find your podcast. How can folks connect with Crystal Davis, though?
Yes, absolutely. So the best way is LinkedIn. LinkedIn is the new Facebook. And it's easy. Crystal with a C, Crystal Y Davis. You just search for me there and you'll be able to connect. And we can inbox there as well.
And, you know, as we conduct this interview, you're speaking on a panel at an event this week. I know you do a lot of keynotes and panel sessions, just like we met when we first met. You were keynoting for the Association for Manufacturing Excellence. So I would just add to that, if you cannot find Crystal through any of those methods she just shared, keep your social radar on because you'll see her on the keynote circuit very regularly. So a lot of good stuff there. All right. So one big final question for you. So we have got football, well, that's baseball right around the corner, but you know, football year round, football down here, right? So what is Mississippi State, how many games are they going to win in the 2021 season?
I'm going to be fair here. You know, I want to say all of them, but I'll be fair. They're going to win. I want to say eight.
Okay. We'll roll with it. Eight wins. And we're going to hold you to it.
I'm manifesting it right now, Scott.
Well, Crystal, such a pleasure to connect with you. I really have enjoyed your perspective here. There's so many more questions that we'll get to next time. But we've been talking with Crystal Davis, the Lean Coach, Inc. And, of course, check her out. Check her podcast out, Lead Lean Podcast. Be sure to connect with her on LinkedIn and other social. And Crystal, we hope to see you again really soon.
Thank you so much.
You bet. All right. So to our audience, hopefully you've enjoyed this as much as I have. This is really neat. You know, we all see those Ask Me Anything sessions, and some folks are good at it, and some folks aren't as good at it. I'll throw myself in that latter camp. I got a sneaking suspicion, Crystal, we could ask you anything, and we could take it to the bank. So we'll have to test that theory down the road. But hey, be sure to check us out at Supply Chain Now. www.thevoiceofglobalsupplychain.com. On behalf of our entire team here, Scott Luton wishing you nothing but the best. Hey, do good, give forward, be the change that's needed. And on that note, we'll see you next time here on Supply Chain Now. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for being a part of our Supply Chain Now community. Check out all of our programming at supplychainnow.com and make sure you subscribe to Supply Chain Now anywhere you listen to podcasts. And follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram. See you next time on Supply Chain Now.